tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM, and this is your Thursday evening edition, the August 13th edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We cover civil rights issues. Tonight we're going to have special interviews with Phil Baer, Geraldine Shelley, and live in the studio with us, Lighthouse Linda LeMaster. That'll be on the Beach Flats after some recorded interviews with folks from San Diego, Forrest Kiro, and all the way across the country from Fort Lauderdale, Janet Riley, talking about the 10th city in the safe zone in Florida. Mike Rotkin, take note. Stay tuned for Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides for the next 2 hours. Fire is on here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Lots of interviews today around the Beach Flats redevelopment, 3rd Street realignment, La Bahia project, that very controversial, highly discussed, but actually some say quickly rushed through program, depends on who you talk to. We're going to have two interviews later in the show, one by Phil Baer, who's spoken on the air before and talks regularly on my show here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The other from a newcomer who has written letters publicly on the issue and has been a resident for 30 years here, Shelley. Miss Shelley, I'm sorry, I'm a little new on these names here. Forgive me if you're listening. We're talking about Geraldine Shelley, a resident of the Beach Hill area. She'll be speaking. And in the studio with us, we have Linda LeMaster, who has lived in Lower Ocean and has been a resident of Santa Cruz for at least 20 years. It looks like it's getting longer and longer, and has lived in the Beach Flats as well. So we're going to be covering that issue again, and we're going to be giving it more coverage as the elections heat up. As you may know, yesterday was the final day for filing for election if you want to be on the city council race in November, and I think we got, I guess, 8 candidates. And we're going to be hearing David Silva give his analysis of, well, it's not really an analysis of the candidates, it's too early perhaps to analyze them, but he's going to refer to them and give us some preliminary thoughts. We're also going to be listening to Forrest Kiro, a Street Lights editor. Street Lights is a or Street Light, actually, is a homeless paper from San Diego, California. And it's sold, it's a monthly, by homeless people on the street, similar to our own Street Spirit, and of course, the legendary Street Shit Sheet, which hasn't been published in a year, but we're always hoping that that editor will get off his duff and do a new issue. The editor, of course, is me. And I, in fact, suggested in the last show that I would try to be writing up an issue of the Street Shit Sheet for this last week to cover what was on the air, and needless to say, that hasn't happened, but it was one of those happy thoughts that we hope, perhaps with the assistance of others, become a reality in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, there is a new newspaper out, which is a free paper. I've mentioned it before. It's Starstruck, a Santa Cruz street journal. Volume 1, Issue 1, appeared, appropriately enough, on August 1, 1998. You can still get it. It's being reprinted. Pick it up at your local saloonery downtown, perhaps at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, if they let you in without arresting you, perhaps at the Java House, again, if you can get in without being arrested. I always append that when I mention those two establishments, because they have threatened to arrest me on site should I cross the sacred threshold. But anyway, Starstruck is to be found downtown at the various places along Pacific Avenue, and it covers a lot of local issues. It's got a long issue, a long story by me on the front page called Boosting Merchant Morale Downtown, the Sitting Band. It has copies of the downtown ordinances for all of you who want to know just what you're being arrested and fined for before you get hauled off by the Santa Cruz's finest after you've been fingered by the hosts, those green-garbed gremlins who walk around with those smiles on their faces downtown. In any case, this is a show concerned, as you may imagine by listening to what I've said so far, with civil rights for the poor people of Santa Cruz, and poor people tend to take the brunt of the action on laws like the ones I've just been talking about. And in San Diego, there's been a lot of response to the difficulties of urban life for homeless people, specifically the tendency of the police to arrest, harass, confiscate their possessions, and even brutalize homeless people simply for trying to exist. It's illegal in San Diego to sleep at night. It's actually illegal to, they can arrest you for lodging if they find you in one place. And as a consequence of laws that make life intolerable for the poor, homeless people have massed at the City Hall. And for 4 months, they slept every night at City Hall until the police began driving them away, which they began doing in mid-July. Now there's a sort of a vigil there every night nonetheless. We're going to hear more about that now from Forrest Curo of Streetlight Newspaper.
On the phone with Streetlight editor and legal fighter, as well as street activist, Forrest Curo. Hey, Forrest. Hello.
Hello, hello.
And Forrest, yesterday was a big day in court for you, August 10th. We were all waiting to hear what was going on. I understand you, of course, have been cut back at your People's Establishment protest at the San Diego Concourse, where previously there had been sometimes as many as 250 or 300 people a night sleeping there. But in mid-July, police raided and began essentially intimidating people from being there, although as far as I know, no actual arrests for sleeping have happened. Is that accurate?
So far, they were going to arrest people for sleeping last week, and Roger felt like he should just leave and wait for whatever the court comes up with. Meanwhile, you've got people essentially in hiding all over downtown. From what I hear, being chased from one place to another by the police. They'll arrest people for warrants, but generally what they do is just come in and intimidate people into moving from one place to another place where they'll be chased out of later.
But in effect, you and several others have every night been maintaining a vigil at the Concourse?
No, I'm afraid we needed to get some rest. We've been hitting the theater crowds, waiting to go in for Miss Saigon with the pamphlets, and keeping a small demonstration with signs out there for those occasions.
But otherwise, the 24-hour vigil has temporarily.
Roger, I think, is still carrying on the vigil at Horton Plaza, which was basically a large city-subsidized shopping center near the City Hall. And that's at the moment one or two people. Everyone else is basically successfully intimidated. And my belief is that as long as they're intimidated, they're in danger, and if they get some courage together and want to join something, they could probably be reasonably safe. It's one of those paradoxical things.
I understand San Diego's FoodNot Bombs, which successfully has been providing food to the protesters over the last month, twice a week, and was at one point actually you got the support of theater goers who embarrassed the police into stopping their scavenging and censoring activities because they were stealing soup and from the FoodNot Bombs.
I don't know how much support they were, but they were offering. But theater goers were reluctant, and the police, I think, were reluctant to arrest anybody for feeding anyway.
But they did, however, drive away FoodNot Bombs eventually, right? I understand they've not come back.
Eventually they did. My feeling about the police on this particular one was that they simply did not want to arrest these nice kids for serving food. Meanwhile, they were under pressure from their bosses and the city concourse business types to do something, get these kids out of there, and evidently they intimidated them successfully.
Wow. Getting back to yesterday and what appeared in court, I guess you did show up in court. Would you have legal counsel? What were the issues involved?
Okay, this is Roger Scott's case. I've been trying to add him to my case in Superior Court. The city and the security services that were in my case put in a motion to have everyone but me, everyone who's been added to my case, and everything involving the current demonstration thrown out. Well, I was too inept to fight it, so they were all thrown out. Meanwhile, the city was arguing in Roger's federal case that, hey, this is already being taken care of in Superior Court. There's no need for the federal court to intervene in this stuff. Well, we were able to show them the letter from the attorneys and the proposed order to throw out that part of the complaint, and a statement from me to the effect that these guys aren't part of that suit anymore. So I think in the federal case, Rogers thing.
Now let's clarify again. What is Rogers thing? What are the actual issues here in Roger Scott's case?
Basically, attempts by the city and by the city to basically shut the demonstration down. The county's refusal to allow permits for it when they return to the county after basically good behavior in their previous moves to the county building. And I'm not so sure that the county is the primary defendant in this, but the fact is that the 1 week they were issuing permits within an hour, and the next week they were saying, well, it's going to take us 20 days to process that.
I see. So you were looking for, Roger Scott was looking for a permit to be able to hold a First Amendment overnight 24-hour vigil in the concourse?
No, by the county administration building. I mean, every once in a while, the group that was normally protesting by the concourse would grow too large and unwieldy, bring in too many unruly and intoxicated characters for anyone in leadership to want to be responsible for him.
So he'd
move it to another building, and
we're talking about essentially one large complex of buildings, all right? It's a four or five block complex, or
the administration building is maybe 7 or 8 blocks to the west. I'm not sure. But basically, we're talking about governments that have jurisdiction in this area and could and should be providing more shelter for people, and they do.
So the issue here was, did the issue have anything to do with this raid in mid-July where the police began seizing people's property and bedding and essentially terrorizing them and breaking up, reducing the numbers from 250 way down to, I guess, the sole one or two or three or four that now remain at night?
Well, that was probably the major issue in the Rogers Court case. and a good part. I'm not sure when it was filed. I think it began with a meeting that we had with the police that same week, in which they told us that after 24 to 48 hours notice, the police were going to start using laws against having vetting and whatnot to drive people out of there. Well, that seemed like a misuse of the law.
Now, you've been successful in the past in calling the police to account legally. You had the protests back in 1996 at the Republican convention that were crushed or molested, and then you went to court to deal with that, right?
I defended myself, lost one count where I'd been sleeping there in the protest, and because of press of time didn't really effectively allow. And then the other case, I decided, all right, I made my point about trying to sleep there, and I was just there in support of Larry's demonstration with the sign. Of course, the judge threw that one out. But when I went back with the sign in late December of this year, I got arrested for basically the same thing. In other words, you may have First Amendment rights, but trying to use them can be very difficult.
And that was Forrest Curo, Streetlight editor and defendant in court. Actually, he won his case as defendant. Now he's attempting to sue to make sure that others have rights to hold up signs about what it means to be homeless on the streets and arrested by the police if you're trying to survive, what it means to not be allowed to sleep at night. These are questions that are, of course, pressing for us in Santa Cruz. For the Santa Cruz is 500 to 1,500 homeless, but all the more pressing for the thousands of homeless people in San Diego, which is a city of over 1.5 million. And the protest at the San Diego City Hall concourse area, which still continues, it was going on yesterday when I called them, although in highly diminished form, is taking a legal turn. Folks are trying to get some kind of legal redress, to get the courts to tell the police to stop harassing people who fall asleep, which is what they're doing down there, and to let the people's establishment, as the protesters call themselves, continue to exercise their First Amendment rights, even though they're poor and the merchants don't like their looks down there. It's an ongoing struggle. For the humorous side of it all, let's turn to Mark Levy to hear him give a little musical commentary on our court system and Justice Thomas.
Justice Thomas, do you promise? Do you swear that you'll be fair? After such a sad ordeal, we'd like to clear the air. You made the highest court today, and we congratulate you. Even though you couldn't get Anita Hill to date you, we'll never know if what she said is true despite the probe. Just like we'll never know if you're wearing clothes beneath that robe. You never gave opinions on the issues of the day, but judgments on your private parts you weren't afraid to say. The sexual harassment charge made hearings an obscenity, and sitting in committee there was pristine pure Ted Kennedy. We got not the seedy details, but precious fewer facts. Everything from natural law down to unnatural acts. Yes, we drag you through the muck, Your Honor. Wasn't it unkind? We learned more of your private life than of your legal mind. You never said a word to anyone about Roe v. Wade. Perhaps it was you were too busy trying to get laid. Humble start to highest court, undaunted you did travel, and all we ask is that you keep your hands upon that gavel, and when you render on our rights and rule on what's obscene, don't be keeping those late nights and keep your language clean. Justice Thomas, we will promise not to bring this up again. Now that you have been confirmed, put down that poison pen. You've passed the test, and now you'll slant the court for Georgie Porgy. But don't invite the other eight to watch a movie orgy. We'll forget what we heard. Can we count on your word? Do you promise, Justice Thomas?
And that is Justice Thomas, Do You Promise? From Mark Levy's most recent album, Born to be Wired. If you want more information on that album, or in fact, if you want information on anything that's happening on this show, or you have any comments you wish to make about anything you've heard on this show, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, H-U-F-F. That's also the acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is the organization I've been working with, lo these many years. And now, as promised, we are going to turn to the Beach Flats redevelopment plan and the controversy around it. You've heard lots of negative criticism of that plan, lots of what I consider to be constructive and harsh criticism of the plan, but we have had yet to find a supporter of the Beach Flats plan willing to come on the air. I went from person to person at the Planning Commission meeting, talking to a seaside company publicist, talking to other people, and they just didn't want to brave this mic or even be interviewed for the air. We also tried to get Scott Kennedy on three separate occasions to approach the mic, one time to discuss, to debate the issue with now City Council candidate and environmental attorney Keith Sugar, and Kennedy, after promising to come on, declined on all three occasions for different reasons. None of them any very, very much validity in my mind, but unfortunately that's the status up to now. Well, before we go into this next interview, I want to say that we finally found someone who is willing to be heard on the record, to give her name, to stand up publicly and speak on an issue which to many of the people listening to this show is has serious ramifications, in the sense that they're very much against this plan, and for our next speaker to speak in favor of it is an act of some courage to come out and speak her mind, and I want to thank her for doing that. I only apologize that I was not a better informed questioner. And hopefully at some point in the future, this dialogue can be continued with more specific questions raised, more informed information exchanged on both sides. Actually, I have in the studio with me here now Linda LeMaster, who's been keeping a low profile, but she's been listening to the last half hour, as I hope you have been here on Bathrob Spears Broadsides at 96.3. And Linda, do you have any remarks about the beach flat situation before we begin, or should we start with Geraldine Shelley's interview? Because that is indeed the name of the woman who is you're going to be listening to in the next 10 or 15 minutes, giving you a point of view that supports the current City Council plan to redevelop the beach flats.
I guess I could make a general remark. I'd like to talk later about my take on the lack of a housing plan. But what I would say now is the beach flats redevelopment plan isn't a plan. That's its main flaw. It's a fake.
And why would you say it's a fake? It's certainly a huge document and certainly involves realigning 3rd Street and creating La Bahia as a hotel project, and there are numerous elements that it has. Well, why would you say it's not a plan?
Well, if you're going to pin me down, Robert, I should say it's not the plan it presents itself as being. It's not a plan for community. It's not a plan that integrates the areas of the beach flat that are long in need of attention with other parts of the community in the city. And to me, it looks like a land grab for Charlie Canfield and the Seaside Company. And I don't want to sound like I'm totally against the boardwalk, but in terms of letting one or two companies, there's a couple others in town, dominate the planning and how the future in our city is going to be, it sucks.
Well, actually, I was going to ask you these questions after this interview, but I'll spring a few of them on you now, Linda. Because these are questions that I guess that I imagine Geraldine might pose to you. Who's going to finance and develop a real development of the beach flats area, if not the Seaside Company? I mean, will anything go anywhere without Seaside Company cooperation and support?
Well, this plan isn't asking the Seaside Company to fund or even properly plan anything as it is. They're getting some concessions. It's considerable concessions, like half of the river mouth, that's land that belongs to the city at this point and should be under the purview of the Coastal Commission and the public. And he has to help with some plumbing and infrastructure and trade. Is that a trade? That's like these banks and businesses that are having mergers, but you don't see even the little tail fins of the fishy of the smaller fish being merged. I don't see it as equitable in any sense.
Are you suggesting that this merger is a merger of the beach flats property into the belly of the Charles Canfield organism? I suppose that would be what a critic might say. And I really don't want to fool anybody. I am currently an opponent of the beach flats redevelopment plan, and I've never really. There's no surprise, Geraldine, whose interview you're about to hear, knew about this before we started. She's heard me speak at City Council, so it's no surprise to her. But I am glad that we did have someone who is at least courageous enough to be on the record on this issue. I only wish our politicians had her courage. Maybe we should run her for City Council. In any case, let's hear what she has to say, unless you have anything more you want to add, Linda, before we begin.
Well, I just want to say I'm not trying to totally dump the idea of development there. I just don't think this plan is a good thing, and it's a fake-out.
Well, let's turn then to Geraldine's take on a lot of this, and we will then resume this discussion. And I wish, listeners, that you were in on this in an active, immediate way, but unfortunately our phone line is, yes, still down. But there is good news around that. The phone company has been contacted. They will be coming out next Wednesday to turn that sucker on, and our new phone number will be 427-FRSC, appropriately enough, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772, which actually was the number Free Radio Santa Cruz had many moons ago, back in 1995, when it was an even more prosperous operation than it is now. So Free Radio Santa Cruz will be having an incoming phone line in a week at 427-3772. And if you have any reactions to what's being said on the air now, or you want to respond to it, I will play any responses you have on my next show, which is Sunday morning at 11 till runs until 1:30 in the afternoon. You can call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And now let's go directly to Geraldine Shelley. Okay, we're on the line with Geraldine Shelley, a Beach Flats resident since...
Beach Hill.
Again, my ignorance shows. Since 1967?
Huh?
And Geraldine, or should I call you Miss Shelley, what would you like?
Jerry.
Jerry.
Uh-huh.
That makes me feel better. So Jerry, you've been here for a while, over 30 years.
Huh?
And you've had a family here, or?
Raised 6 children, yeah.
And let me ask you this. You came to Santa Cruz at that time from where?
Well, actually, my husband and I are natives of San Jose.
Uh-huh.
But he was in the Coast Guard, and when he retired, we wanted to come back because our parents were still living, but we could not return to San Jose, which had changed from an agricultural community to Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to Santa Cruz because both of us had such fond memories of it when we were children and got the treat of coming to Santa Cruz to the beach.
So you've lived all this time in the Beach Hill area?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I guess, how are things different between 1967 and 1998? How has the Beach Hill area changed?
Well, I don't know that, when we first moved here, all the rentals practically were for seniors. There were many seniors in the neighborhood. And then, of course, university opened, and pretty soon the seniors became fewer and students became more in the rental. Other than that, I don't... many of the houses have been renovated. We've renovated ours, and across the street at Golden Gate Villa has been renovated. Of course, you know about Sunshine Villa, so that, what a wonderful job that was.
Tell me, pretend I don't.
Oh, well, it had been an old hotel. It had been built as a mansion, then became a hotel, and fell into disregard. It was purchased. Three or four fires had been started inside the hotel
mm-hmm.
by people camping out.
Mm-hmm.
Then Michael O'Hearn and his partner purchased it, and it's now assisted living for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a magnificent job of restoring the original mansion, and of course they added to it. And in fact, my mother was there for over 3 years, so I appreciate the effort that he did in restoring that property.
So what kind of business are you and your family in, or I should say?
Well, my husband is a flight instructor.
Uh-huh.
My husband's a flight instructor, and I am a retired librarian.
Uh-huh. Librarians, wow. I've got to watch out for them. So,
anyway, I started volunteering in the Beach Flats more than 15 years ago.
What kind of volunteer work did you do?
Well, Peter Carota was here at that time, and he had a food pantry.
Mm-hmm. I guess he had trouble with getting that past the city council for a while there, right?
Well, I don't know. I think he was one of the very few Anglos, I think, that the Latino community really trusted. Of course, Peter spoke Spanish fluently.
Mm-hmm.
Arranged to have a Catholic mass there on Sunday evening.
Peter did a food distribution operation prior to his Holy Cross Church establishment, right?
He established the...
That was my recollection from talking to Shannon Casano, an early worker you may have worked with her.
Oh, yeah. And then, after the St. Benzo's Catholic Kitchen was established, he still came down regularly.
Mm-hmm.
The food and the toys at Christmas time for the children and, did and clothing and, really helped out down there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have, I've been in some of those homes and in my opinion, it is a disgrace to this community that people are forced to live in some of those slums.
Can you be more specific about what blocks, for example, you consider to be...
Is it standard?
No, it's just, you know, kind of random. Some units are taken care of very well with responsible landlords, and some aren't, and they're just kind of scattered all over. But we're going to get to the Beach South and Laura plans.
Yes, let me tell the audience. We met at a play out at Cabrillo, and you kind of mentioned that you'd seen me speaking at City Council and felt that you couldn't agree with what I said. You wondered, you know, how I could be saying what I was saying, at least some of the things. And I thought, great, well, let's hear from another point of view. And that, of course, had to do with the Beach Flats Redevelopment 3rd Street Realignment Plan that is currently the talk of the town, and I guess a major issue on the City Council agenda when it returns in September. So why don't I just let you take the floor and just speak as you will, and then I'll ask you some questions.
Okay. I feel the plan is not perfect. However, it's a plan, and I think it's time to move forward. We have had Chautauquas. I was on one beach area committee before the earthquake. We thought we were making progress, and then, of course, the earthquake came. Things have not moved at all, and it is these hardworking families in the beach flats are trying to raise their children in a decent environment, and that's not seen that. I think it's time to consider the families and the kids and move forward and make improvements.
Well, now let me ask you, what sort of improvements are you thinking? Are you thinking of the removal of, you mentioned the slum housing that you feel is in the beach flats. What specific improvements would you expect would come about through this plan?
Well, I think there will be cooperation between the commercial and the city, and I think some decent, really affordable housing. It's not affordable housing at the present time when you have five people living in a studio. They're all working and paying rent. I don't think that's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the families may have a better time. It'll be cleaned up. Some of the landlords will be forced to improve their properties, and I think that will be for the best.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a contention that that the amount of housing being provided doesn't really cover the number of people being evicted and the number of families being relocated. What do you think of that, Arthur?
Well, I think that there is a lot of misconception being bandied about, and a lot of scare tactics, anonymous things being posted on the trees about if you're not, they're going to be losing, I don't know, 200 and something housing. That isn't true. They're taking down, I think it's 23, and they're going to replace it at first with more than 30. So I can't quite see why they think the scare tactics is going to do any good.
I'm really embarrassed here because what I'd love to have are the opponents' arguments before me so I could present them to you for your reflection. And I want to do that so we can really have an intelligent discussion. But first, I want to give you an opportunity to again tell me some of the offhand criticisms of the plan have to do with the fact that a lot of money and concessions are being given to the Seaside Company. What is your take on that?
Well, the Seaside Company may get some benefits, but they are throwing some things in the pot too. They're trading property. Inside the perimeter of which will be the residential area of the beach flat. And the city is not going to make any headway without the cooperation of the Seaside Company.
Mm-hmm.
Until that's accepted realistically, I don't think too much is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a friend who is writing an article on the beach flats, and it is, of course, from a relatively different point of view than yours.
Yes.
You may have heard her speak at City Council. Her name is Becky Johnson.
Yes, I've heard Becky Johnson speak.
How would you feel if I put her on the line to, should we say, ask you some questions? Would you feel comfortable with that?
Probably not. I think maybe I've, had my say. There are some people in our neighborhood object to the convention center. However, none of them have come forward to say that, and had plenty of opportunities. So this is kind of, in a quandary of what's happening.
So you don't feel this plan is being rushed I mean, there are some who point out that, you know, that they're having one planning commission hearing with public input after the draft environmental impact report's questions have returned. But this, there's some who claim that this is being rushed before the elections. You dispute that.
I don't accept that as a valid statement. Things in this plan, we have been to so many planning and traffic meetings on this issue that people who claim they have not had any, been able to have any input, I think, you know, where have they been all these years and where have they been the past year?
Well, for example, there was a contention that the first time Spanish-speaking material appeared was at the first Planning Commission hearing at which, I guess, you heard me speak a week and a half ago. But that was the first time the actual plan made it into a Spanish translation. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that there was an information put out in Spanish about the program. I know that the two council members have been meeting with people in the beach flats, in Spanish-speaking meetings, trying to inform the residents of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Well, but of course, there's the concern that the people who have been speaking are advocates of the plan. I assume you're talking about Kennedy, Council Members Kennedy, Council Member Hernandez, and perhaps Council Member Rotkin? Are those the
first? Right. Well, I think that they may be proponents of the plan, but I do think that they would give truthful information and truthful answers to inquiries.
You do. Okay, well, certainly, you know, our experiences can differ on this. Certainly, honest people can disagree. It has been true that 800 pages of public response to the EIR resulted in, this is my understanding, 61 pages of deletions and additions, and that there were only three copies that existed for the public, one in each of the two city libraries, and one purchased for $60 from the group that opposes this development, the Beach Flats Neighborhood Association. Have you read through any of that? I mean, I haven't certainly, but have you?
I did see it. I went down to the public library. Mm-hmm. I went through it. And
what about this 125-foot roller coaster? What do you think of that?
Well, of course, we're not going to be impacted by that.
You don't think that a higher roller coaster would result in more noise and also the expansion would be significantly more traffic?
I don't think the traffic is the big issue that they're trying to make it. Because it's jammed now. How can it be any further impacted? People are not going to come if the traffic is that bad, is my feeling. Mm-hmm. And if actually they make a shuttle that works, I think that's going to be a big improvement.
What about the concern that retail space developed will in essence be significant competition to the